All right, greetings. This is James Gillen, your host, and we've got another great show here. We've got Jason Verbelli, who's an independent researcher and experimenter with the Suppressed Sciences, and he's worked with John Searle and Walter Russell, and he's been doing a lot of research into all of these crazy new technologies that are coming out now, and believe me, they are suppressed, and we'll go into that as well, but without any further ado, I want to welcome Jason on the show. Jason, are you with us?
Yes, thank you very much for having me, and thank you to your listeners also.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, this stuff is right up my alley. I don't tell many people this, but it was really interesting. I was actually studying with a llama, and went through some initiations and other things with him, and he told me basically I was here to help bring in these alternative energies. That was one of my goals, I guess, before I incarnated. And at the time, I laughed at him. I thought that was really funny, you know, because, my left brain just does not function as well as it should. I'm much more of a right brain person. But it's funny how I've ended up in this field and working with some of the top physicists around the world, and you know, over the past 25 years, trying to get some of this technology out. You know, as you are, and actually had some friends die around this experience. Wow. And so, you know, there is some major suppression. Now, we can get into that a little later. But, you know, I want to really talk about maybe what you've been up to, some of the research you've been doing, some of the people you've been hanging out with, and what you've learned from them. And we can just go from there.
Sure, absolutely. Well, my focus has been the work of Walter Russell, who was good friends with Nikola Tesla back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And not too many people are aware of his brilliant work. Walter Cronkite considered him the Leonardo da Vinci of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And he had 30 books, many more articles and books written about him. He was working with NORAD in the 60s on some very unique technologies, which he had announced were successful and that could be released from our bind to gasoline and other technologies. My focus is also the work and technology of Professor John Searle. And I'd been intensely studying and following his updates and work, and gotten a chance to meet with him and visit the facility and really look into what a magnet is and why, and study these technologies in a completely different context and a different perspective. So rather than looking at it in the mainstream views, I try to pay attention to what isn't really taught in the mainstream, isn't really focused on, and stuff that you're not even going to really find in libraries. Mm-hmm. So that's my deal, is trying to track down the super suppressed information and the stuff that's swept under the rug.
Now, I know John Searle had some, we can get into some of the Tesla thing, and feel free to interject any of that if it ties into Searle's information, but I'm pretty familiar with his work, and I know about the device, and there's a guy named Otis Carr. Are you familiar with his work and Ralph Ring?
Very much so. Actually, about 3 weeks ago, I got to visit with a good friend of Ralph's and play with the Utron. And I have some footage on that I uploaded on YouTube recently. So, yeah, I'm very familiar with their work.
Great, yeah. And it seems to be there's a common thread there I've seen in all these devices. One, most of them put out a different type of energy or a different type of electricity. It actually seems to travel around the wire versus through the wire, the ones I've been playing with. And then it also... It generates extreme cold, very cold temperatures when they're operating.
Correct.
And they actually create their own field, a field of energy around them. It actually protects them from EMP pulses or anything else.
Yes.
So it does seem to be the energy of the future, because my gut feeling is telling me this whole grid is going to go down, you know.
Well, yeah, for the benefit of us all, even for the benefit of the grid. It's been tired, it's been worn out, it's done its obsolete job. So we don't need it anymore, and there are many more methods that we could be utilizing. and focusing on, like these other technologies, like you said. One thing that I have been studying the perspective on is what electricity is and what magnetic energy and what fields are. And in the perspective of Walter Russell and these other really brilliant researchers like Ed Leedskalnin and Dewey B. Larson and a bunch of these really brilliant people. So man takes heat as being anything above 0 Celsius. But heat to the universe is anything above 0 Kelvin or absolute zero. So when we're utilizing these technologies today in conventional ways, it's generating a lot of high frequencies. High frequencies is heat and radiation. Now, these newer technologies, or rather ancient technologies, are utilizing what seems to be very low waves. And low waves are closer to zero. Closer to zero is colder. It's still heat in universal terms. You're still utilizing and diverting heat on different scales. But atomic heat to us would be very cold. And when you start to utilize these things and harness these energies through order, just creating order out of chaos, through harmonics, through magnetization, or even consciousness itself, these things are completely revolutionary and would, you know, bring down the grid for sure. And there's ways to explain them. It's not so esoteric or mysterious as people make it seem, or as it's been portrayed throughout history. There are ways to explain it, and each era throughout time had its way of explaining it to the people of that time. But those translations have gotten lost to us. So now we need to have new terminology. We have to have a new unifying language and look at it from new perspectives so that we can solve some of these issues.
And I think that's the key, is having a different language. And I know when you bring that new language in, you're going to be hassled by the old guard and I call it the dinosaur brigade, which is going to come up and say, you know, that's impossible. You know, you can't create energy. You know, it's a law of entropy. They bring all these things.
They are correct. You cannot create energy. You cannot destroy energy. But it's the semantics that we have to play with here. You can't create or destroy energy, but you can consciously engineer a more efficient path for energy of different scales to present itself, because you're allowing it to present itself. The energy is already there, as Nikola Tesla and Paul Dirac and Wilhelm Reich and all these people have been saying. The energy is already there. It's just a matter of allowing it to present itself, because nature only provides us with certain scales of order. It takes man to consciously engineer different scales of atomic order, and then we can start harnessing that atomic energy and beyond. Depending on the level of technology and resources to your availability.
Yeah, there seems to be, what I see, one of the biggest problems right now is that the way things are set up, and I know Nikola Tesla ran into that too, is that he had a way of broadcasting energy so it would be free to everyone, but the powers that be wanted to harness it and put a meter on it and charge everyone for this same, and that same consciousness is still at play today. Even though these technologies were available back in the 20s and 30s, it's unbelievable how old these. I mean, they go back to ancient times.
Ancient. I mean, I've had the same debates and arguments with people today about how J.P. Morgan and DuPont and other people versus Tesla and all these other brilliant guys and alternatives. And I was saying, you know, Tesla was ready to provide wireless electricity to the world and do all these different methods of energy for free. And these people that I'm talking to, well, they say, well, that's not too smart. How are you going to charge people money for it? Having the same exact mentality that got us here. And they really couldn't understand. Like, they were calling J.P. Morgan, oh, those people are really smart because they figured out a way to charge people money. Smart? No, that's not smart in the long run. It might be sly, and it might be you know, might be smart for the moment for them, you know, for their benefit, but it's not wise. You know, wisdom is for everybody, and you know.
I've always said that there's a lot of clever people out there, but where's the wisdom?
Yeah, there's too many geniuses and not enough wise men.
Yeah, I always see that the ultimate power in the universe, not to go esoteric, but it is love, and it's the cosmic glue that holds everything together. And to me, when you're in the unified field or you have that consciousness, it's a consciousness of love and joy and bliss and service to others. And when you're in that flow, you have all your needs are met. It's just amazing. You can, you know, stuff just comes to you because you're in that flow. But when you get into the me principle and what's in it for me and start running that program, you know, and then you add all the emotional trauma to that, you know, all the childhood trauma and everything else to the me program, it just implodes everything.
Excellent use of words too. The me program and I mean, I have a different perspective on love and frequencies than other people. Mm-hmm. The perspective of Walter Russell is completely flipped. It's 180 degrees to everything we're ever taught and everything everybody else promotes. Mm-hmm. Everybody else promotes to raise your vibration and to make sure you get into the spirit of love and to raise your vibration. Get away from zero. Get as far away from zero as you possibly can. But the information that I've researched is that zero is light. Zero is love. Zero, it's the state of nothingness. It's a state of emptiness that attracts all things, or rather allows for everything to push to you. Mm-hmm. So when people are saying to raise your vibration, to me that's meaning to become in a radiative state, not in a gravitic or magnetic state, because the lower that you're trying to achieve, the lower the vibrations, the low waves are what travel between atoms. The high waves are what bounce off of the atoms. Mm-hmm. So we want to travel with no limits, no resistance, between all things. We want to get closer to the source, closer to zero, not farther away.
Mm-hmm. I know the real ancient practices, you know, like Yigong and things like that, they call it the practice of no mind, and where you're doing these moves and you're mastering the elements and things like that. But it's a process where you actually, you know, you get rid of the mind altogether, and then you automatically shift into higher mind, whatever you want to call it, a different frequency or a different level. Yeah. But to the zero point, you know, they talk about the void, you know, where that rich potential exists, you know, that's where the real creative energies or creativity comes from.
Exactly. And it's about getting back to the source, not mm-hmm. farther away from it, because it takes more energy to get away from zero.
Yeah. But
everything wants to naturally get back to a state of stillness. All things in motion want to go to a state of rest.
Yeah, it's like less is more. And people have a hard time understanding that.
And thoughts are in motion themselves. And it's when you try to approach zero thought, because you can never get to zero. You can mm-hmm. only infinitely approach zero. Mm-hmm. So that's the misconception. You can never reach a speed limit, and you can never get to zero, because everything's always in motion, but you can ever approach zero. You can always try to be stillness or be the light, be mm-hmm. still. Which is easier said than done, but I think it's the exact opposite of what is being promoted today, is we have to get towards the zero point with all that potential is, which is stillness.
Well, I know one of the concepts, I want to get back into the more of the scientific aspects of this, but one of the concepts I've seen is one of the physicists I work with, I love what he said. He said that everything comes from one point. And he said, become the point, you know, and everything comes to you. You don't have to, you know, it may go away, but it always comes back. You know, he said, just be the point, you know, stay centered in that point. It's kind of an interesting concept. And I've always thought about that, you know, rather than get into reactionary mind and try to control everything and everything, just stay in your own center and let that happen. And this concept that they teach us about how creation happened, where the Big Bang, you know, and there was this point, and then everything exploded and radiated outwards, and it's this ever-expanding balloon or bubble. And I've always had that question, okay, if you have expansion and you have this point, then you had to have contraction to get to that point.
Something it's simultaneous.
Exactly.
It's not a action and then a reaction.
Uh-huh.
It's more of a simultaneous action reaction. There's two different types. Like when you take a pill or you eat some food, that's an action, which then your body will have a reaction of digesting later.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you're sitting in a bathtub, the water rises as you sit down. There's a different action reaction process taking place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like that our whole belief system and technology and everything is based on that concept of expansion or radiating outward or explosion, where's the implosion? You know, they've totally killed the other half of the equation, or the feminine aspect of what's going on.
Precisely. And they have effectively made equations to describe how there is no other side and how there is no female half. Pretty much they're saying that, you know, everything is expansion, everything came from one point and from nothing, and then all of a sudden exploded from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really understood any of the mainstream theories, which is why, again, I focus on, you know, Walter Russell and
mm-hmm.
and all these other brilliant alternatives like John Keeley or it's really different perspectives that people got to look into, and you can look into for free. It doesn't take any money or any diploma to look into the alternatives.
I've always wanted to run by some things and sit. I've had some opportunities to do that, but I would love to sit with some of these guys and run by some of my theories and get some feedback on them. You know, I've always felt that there's a combination of singularities all happening at the same time, and each dimension is collapsing or contracting to give birth to whatever is on the next dimension. And it's a series. It's kind of a weird concept, but it's a series of contractions, expansions that are all going on at the same time throughout a multidimensional reality.
You're correct, but I think that we as a people are misusing the term dimension, mm-hmm. and we should be using the term scales.
Yeah.
Because we're all in the same dimension, atoms and all these things and stars, everything big and small is in the same third dimension, but a box the size of an atom is a different dimension than the box 3 feet wide. Mm-hmm. And those are different scales, and there are different things happening, different time associated with each scale.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you're.
So the scale, would you say the scale would be that best way we could understand it is maybe the electromagnetic light spectrum would be the scale on which these other realities exist?
There's no real way to describe that in this context because you have to associate time with these scales. And atomic time to us is what we would call instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
An hour to us is an instant or a trillion years to an atom.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start aligning things on different scales and utilizing the energy of that scale, you start to be subjected to the time of that scale. Because you're allowing things to flow at a different rate, much, much faster, in and around you, not just bouncing off the object, but you're actually geometrically reconfiguring the mass itself, allowing for energy to pass through like a gate in a more efficient manner. And when you're doing that, and these crafts are doing that, the amount of order will dictate how much it shines or it glows, and how much it levitates and how fast it can go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all harmonics. And they're all using these combinations of male and female energies or high and low waves or electromagnetic or magnetoelectric, whatever you want to call it. There's different dimensions and different scales of energy, different scales of time. But we are only looking on our scale. Einstein mm-hmm. and all these people are only looking on our scale. When you start engineering things consciously on smaller scales, that's when the funny stuff starts to happen, and you are not subject. You're not subject to the same laws of inertia and time and energy and resistance as our scale when you consciously engineer things.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I know. Watching the ships here, what they do here is just mind-blowing. And we've watched them. One of the physicists I talked to, he said some of those ships you're seeing are maybe a foot wide, but to our perspective. But if you were to go into it and meet it at its frequency or whatever, it would be 1,200 feet wide.
Yeah, that's one of the few people who professional people I've heard who actually says that.
Yeah, and so on our dimension or from our perspective, it may be small, but from the perspective that those beings are on, that are on that ship, it's, you know, for all I know, it could be a whole different universe that you're stepping into. You know, it's I guess it's all relative.
Exactly, and the scale at which you are utilizing the energy is the scale at which you are relative to. So it's whole new worlds that can open up. You know, because most of the arguments against these things are that things can't travel, you know, so far in the universe because, you know, of the time difference. But they're only looking at the outer space. Mm-hmm. There's an inner space, which that's really interesting to think about. It's a fractal universe. It's not just a one-way universe.
Mm-hmm.
There's always more roots than there are branches.
We've watched these ships morph from one to four and actually become four separate ships. And you know, that was hard to wrap my mind around. Okay, are these the same people on the same ship jumping and coming back, jumping and coming back at different times? And now they're all lined up. And what happens if they meet themselves? You know, it's like
is seriously some stuff that's possible, man. This is if you were to travel really, really quickly from one location to the other, you'd get there in almost no time at all on our scale.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start utilizing atomic energy and you start geometrically orienting things on nanoscales and really beyond, you're subject to different times.
Yeah.
When you move with the same amount of force, you're mm-hmm. going to get much faster. And it can get to the point where you can arrive at point B and see yourself just leaving point A.
Yeah.
Or you can arrive a year before you leave point A.
What's even more interesting is, would you even like yourself? You know, if you met yourself.
I think it'd be pretty much the same person, depending on how far back or... I don't know. There's probably rules to that, but is it possible? Absolutely.
Yeah. I just think about how many people, you know, how we mirror with others. You know, we project our stuff on others and things like that. And what would happen if you met yourself? You know, and
that's the thing about the introspection and going into inner space. And a lot of people say, you know, religions say there's demons in the pit of darkness and the inner space, and there's all these nasty things there. But ultimately, I think whatever you encounter there is part of you, because you're going in. It's not outside of yourself. Anything you encounter there is probably ultimately an aspect of yourself.
Yeah,
whole worlds, entire world.
Yeah, there's an old saying, the consciousness in which you seek is the consciousness in which you connect.
Mm.
So we are connecting to... you know, realities that resonate, you know, with our own consciousness.
And some of these beings that are piloting these ships, some of them could be military and others obviously not.
Mm-hmm.
Do they come from outer space or are they coming from within ourselves? Or some different dynamic of atomic scales or something, mm-hmm. of inner space? I mean, there's so many different combinations of scenarios to think about.
Yeah,
the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah. I like what Michio Kaku said. He said maybe we shouldn't be looking for them, you know, in with radio waves and things like that. Maybe we should looking for them in other dimensions, you know.
When I met him, he didn't say anything like that. He was actually denying everything and said that there's no such thing as aliens. There's no such thing as free energy, and never to pay attention to that quackery. That's what he told me.
How long ago was that?
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's made.
I don't really care for Michio Kaku at all.
Yeah, he's made quite a transition. I think he's got some big reality checks. But it was kind of interesting because I had a conversation with one thing. He said there's not enough plank energy to take, you know, a physical craft into another dimension or things like that and everything.
He's right. On our scale.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you start geometrically reconfiguring the mass through unconventional magnetization processes, mm-hmm. all the things he's talking about go down the drain.
Yeah.
Literally, down the fee-spiraling drain.
Yeah. And, you know, I told him, I said, well, you know, what if you access that zero point, whatever you want to call it, that of creation itself? I mean, would that be enough Planck energy? You know, if the temple is within and God is within, whatever you want to call it, and God is this omnipotent force, you know, why couldn't you take this physical body, raise its frequencies, and move it to another frequency, or I don't know, even lower its frequencies, I don't know, and go wherever you want. You know, and he goes, that's an interesting concept. He goes, I'll put that to my students, you know, and I didn't hear back from him after that. But
yeah, there's a really cool link to look into by a man named Dr. Robert Kuntz.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Open Letter to Michio Kaku.
Hmm.
And anybody can just look that up. It's just a really cool letter to see the different perspectives versus Michio Kaku.
Yeah, I would like to look at it. I know just recently he has been coming out with some pretty, you know, a total reversal basing on where he was before.
Oh, how nice.
So, you know, maybe you shook him up a little. Who knows?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people did because they've been sending him strong messages.
Yeah.
Trying to get him to pay attention to certain things that he had previously been denying and ridiculing. So hopefully he is coming around, and we'd love to have him take a look at some of these new technologies, see what he has to say.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I know one thing is when you are like the head of a university or a science department or whatever, you know, you have a fine line to walk, and you can push the envelope so far before you find yourself out on the streets.
Yeah, don't want to lose that pension.
Yeah, with no tenure, nothing, you know, pension. So I understand, you know, part of that. But with me, it's like I'm all for truth. You know, I want to get down to the truth, and I'm all for, you know, freeing up the people and, you know, you know, into service. And if that other reality, you know, gets in the way, then. You know, I'm all for just walking away from it. You know,
yes. That's why I love you, James. You know, see, you're a good person, man.
Trust me, I've pissed off a lot of people. You know,
I love you for it.
In a nice way.
You know? Yeah, we try.
Yeah, but you know, getting into these magnetic fields, I've always been fascinated, and I haven't had time to really dig into this like you have, and. I guess we have a major misunderstanding concerning magnetism and the fields and how we're going about utilizing them.
Yeah, major misconceptions. But there's, you know, different perspectives to see it from, because we have the Newtonian mechanics, we have the Einsteinian relativity view, and then we have the Russellian science with Walter Russell. We have mm-hmm. Tesla's view, who said that Einstein was completely misinterpreting the mass and energy. I personally don't see that mass and energy convert at all. Mass is mass, energy is energy, light is light. They're three different things. And it takes consciousness to order waves.
Mm-hmm.
Ordered waves order mass. And when mass is ordered, it allows you to see the light that's already there, like lifting a veil, mm-hmm. lifting a veil of chaos. Atomic chaos is what prevents us from seeing light. And then when we have harmony and harmonic waves, it creates geometry and art on the atomic level and beyond. And the more space that's created in between these atoms, that are known as magnets, these alignments open up like gates and allow the energy to flow through, or allow you to see the light that's there. Everything's already present. All the mass, all the energy, all the waves, all the light. And all the consciousness. But it takes a intelligent mind to reorder things and allow for those things to present themselves in more effective ways. Can't create or destroy anything, but you can integrate mass and you can disintegrate mass, which will be misinterpreted as creating or destroying. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways to look at things. I look at magnets, and when I see them going together, I don't see magnets pulling together at all. I see them attempting to push through each other. I don't see any pulling forces at all. I'm looking at these things with different perspectives. And when you look at a vortex, you don't see any pulling forces. It's the illusion of pull. When you have your spoon in a glass of water and you're stirring it, it creates a vortex in the glass. Mm-hmm. The tip of that vortex is being pushed down to the bottom of the glass. But people observe the illusion that the tip of the vortex is being pulled down to the glass. And people create equations and mathematics and branches of science about how the whirlpool is being pulled down by some dark matter or dark force. I don't see that. I don't see any dark matter in between two magnets making them pull together. I see two vortexes pushing through each other, and they're trying to push together. And what I see a magnet is any material. Could be wood, could be metal, plastic, anything. Any material that is atomically aligned according to certain geometries is going to be a magnet. Because a magnet is any material that's just atomically aligned acting as a wind tunnel for heat. Because heat is anything above zero Kelvin. And when you can guide that heat, guide that atomic wind, that's what we call electricity. And the more ordered that you can align things on smaller scales, the stronger the energy that you're going to get, and the stronger that energy will present itself, because you're allowing it to. Mm-hmm. It's all about conscious order.
You know, I think it's interesting. You look at the wands of the magician, and most of them are this curly-cued vortex. The wand will be going in a bigger circle down to smaller circles to a point. And they say, you know, their spells or whatever else they're doing is just an extension of their own consciousness. And the wand is just directing that to a power point, you might say. And then it's directed at whoever or whatever they're aiming at. You know?
This is like real life Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And it's been written on the walls of Egyptian temples in the form of hieroglyphics this whole time. Mm-hmm. I see these hieroglyphics in a completely different way. I see advanced technologies. I see ways to power things, circuit diagrams, and a bunch of weird stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't see what Zahi Hawass on the History Channel has been trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that poor guy. I guess he's out of there finally. You know, now we'll probably find out the truth of what's really going on there.
it is 2012, so anything can happen.
Yeah. I always tell people, you know, my take on the pyramids is the aliens built them and we are the aliens, you know.
And forgot.
We just forgot, you know, what we did. You know, we forgot our roots, our most ancient roots, and forgot, you know, the wisdom of the past, you know, that because, you know, basically due to cataclysms and things like that where we had to start over as primitives, you know, you really think about if the grid goes down, I mean, what use is all of your technology if you have no power source from it? It goes on the trash heap right away.
Yeah.
And you're back down to bows and arrows or maybe guns until your powder runs out. And then you're back to clubs and bows and arrows, basically.
Or you're back to using earth batteries and lemons as batteries. If you know, depending on how much you know about nature.
Exactly.
How much you can utilize. Mm-hmm. Don't have to just have bows and arrows. You can have some serious technology by utilizing nature alone.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the masses. You know, what a civilization, you know, what would happen to a major civilization? More than likely, you know, you get back down to how you're going to get your food.
Yeah, you better start growing more lemons and batteries.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, I just bought a bag of lemons. I don't know why, but I know it worked. You know, I find it interesting. There's times, and I know it's not really related to storms. It can be, and the charge, you know, in the air as well. But a lot of times when you meditate and you have a really good meditation and you've got the energy just surging through you, you become magnetic. And there's certain times everything just sticks to you, paper, everything, you know, you can't shake it off you, or even, you know, sometimes metal or whatever, but some people I know are human magnets.
Yes.
Yeah, I always wonder what that process is, or how your body would, you know, I know you magnetize things by running a current through them, and it, I guess that's exactly what's going on. You're running a current through your
somewhat through
your body and magnetizing it.
You can to lock in a magnet. Yes, you have to have a current, two currents. Mm-hmm. On either side, inversed, and then you lock it in place. But you can rearrange the atoms making up a metal just by putting it in the presence of another magnet and then taking it out of the presence of that magnet in a certain way, retaining the atomic shape. It's like when you put a piece of metal next to a magnet, mm-hmm. all the atoms of that piece of metal are facing the direction of that magnetic field like leaves blowing in a wind.
Mm-hmm.
And when you keep them in that shape, that metal is now a magnet. And I have videos on YouTube showing how to magnetize and demagnetize pieces of metal just from reordering the atoms by putting it in the magnetic field, taking it out a certain way. Mm-hmm. You create order, you have a magnet. You create disorder, it's no longer a magnet. Mm-hmm. Heat doesn't really have anything to do with taking the magnetism away, because what magnetism is atomic order. The more order, the more flow, which means the more magnetic you will become. Mm-hmm. So when you're more ordered within and you take the time to slow your thoughts and try to get closer to zero, the more magnetic you will become. And if you get to certain scales, throughout history it's said that all things will come to you. Mm-hmm. If you reach that certain point, or you can move mountains, or do a bunch of really cool stuff that humans are supposed to be doing.
Well, I know, and the yogis, a lot of the yogis, I've always talked about that, is that, you know, they talk about the body as just being dust, it's worthless, it's Maya, it's an illusion, forget about it, and they're focused on leaving, you know, on getting out of here, and they die. You know, they,
well, that's not cool.
They, you know, basically, yeah, they create that, their body does turn to dust, and their life force is removed from the body and they die. But the people that ascend actually do it the opposite way. They actually call the energy into themselves.
Yes.
And energize every cell of their body, and do, you know, by mastering judgment and loving everything and everyone here, including their own body, and seeing it as divine, and those guys ascend.
Thank you, because high frequencies is disintegration, disintegrating. You're mm-hmm. evaporating, going bye-bye, death, mm-hmm. radiation. But when you're going within, it's a centripetal action, meaning you're creating a vortex. You're creating a pushing force towards you. It's not pulling towards you. You're just creating an empty state within yourself, which allows all things to push to you. Mm-hmm. Which is misinterpreted as you pulling everything to you. No, you're just ordering yourself and allowing things to push to you.
Mm-hmm.
And
would that be on under the concept that the universe loves a vacuum, and you're actually creating a vacuum, or I don't know if that would be the right way of saying.
Well, yeah, the way that I like to explain it is digging a hole in the sand at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And when you dig a hole in the sand at the beach next to water, you're eventually going to reach water. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to get to a point where no matter how fast you dig, the water will pour in faster than you could possibly dig out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to reach a point where there's going to be more energy flooding in than they possibly you can take out.
Mm-hmm. I notice in externally, we're so focused on external living and controlling everything and moving in that direction. And you know, he who has the most control and the most gold wins, you know, but they still die. But, you know, I don't know what they win. But, you know, it's like, I like to think, like, he who dies with the most toys wins. And I just go, yeah, but you're still dead. You know. But,
and that's the thing, is that there's two types of control and two types of gold.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to control other people and force your will onto other people and try to make them bend to your order, or you can just create order within yourself and enlighten yourself. And the more order that you create within yourself, you will become that gold. Literally, your body will mm-hmm. glow and become ionized because it's so geometrically ordered on small scales. Yeah. But the more that you try to order other people, the more it closes off your personal atoms, the more mm-hmm. it closes your gates. So you're not going to be able to utilize that. You're just going to be trying to control other people, like the new world disorder that, mm-hmm. that we're trying to fight today.
Powers, so just, I call them the powers that were.
I like that even better.
They're pretty much on their way out. They're no longer frequency specific to where the planet's going. And
yeah, who?
And,
who?
Yeah.
These people yeah. are back in the 20th century. People, you know, have the defeatist attitude about how we can't have this technology or that technology because they won't allow us to.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's ultimately us. Have you started building it? Probably not. So I just like to say, adopt the role that you're waiting for. Mm-hmm. So by the time that person comes to save you, you have already saved yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very focused on becoming sovereign here, and that is part of it, to incorporate those technologies into it. I know about the resistance that's there to when you do that. I mean, believe me, I'm getting it firsthand here. But yeah. It is really important to, you know, become as sovereign as you can on every level right now, because when things do implode, when one world implodes, it's not going to really affect you because, you know, you're just going to go, oh, what was that?
You know? You've already switched to that particular scale.
Yeah.
Willingly, by yourself, ahead of time, mm-hmm. rather than everybody forcing you because your world crashes in on you.
Yeah, you just simplify, become sovereign, and you're cruising. You know, like down in I just was down in Mexico for a while, and I was thinking about it, you know, what happened is, you know, we're having this huge crash here, you know, they're not talking about it as bad as it really is, and people are all losing their homes and this and that, and you know, they kind of depend on tourism, and the tourism is down there, but it's funny, they go, well, the tourism is down, and now we have all this food, what are we going to do with it, you know?
Yeah.
And so yeah, they may not have money, you know, the tourist money, but they do have all this food, you know, they've got all this fish and chicken and papaya and mangoes and avocados and just stacked up there. Well, you know, there's their abundance. And so, you know, when the economy crashes, you know, if it totally crashes, they're just going to go, you know, what was that? You know?
Yeah, because they're self-serving themselves and yeah, everybody has the means to help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If all satellites were suddenly taken out by a solar flare, or if, you know, all of a sudden electricity ceased to work one day or one week or one month, would you be able to survive? Would you be able to hang? Just this rhetorical question
yeah.
to ask yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just had that experience here because we had this just killer storm came through. We're way up in Washington State, high up in the mountains. And we had this huge snowstorm followed by an ice storm.
Ooh.
And it looked like Godzilla came through. It just snapped off telephone pole after telephone pole. Trees were snapped in half. We had a tree missile go through our meditation room right through the roof. And, you know, it was quite an experience. But, you know, through all of that, we had about 8 days of no power here. And, you know, you could see everybody was freaking out. Everybody was, you know, like, what are we going to do? And there were some people are freaking out. Most people in the town are pretty self-sufficient. They're, especially the old timers, they know, they go, yeah, well, you know, we just go back to light up our wood stoves and our wood cook stoves
yeah, what's, you know, the matter with you?
Throw
you
a know? Pan of water on there and put it in the bathtub and take a bath, you know, but, you know, we're set up here because we have propane cooking and we have propane, water heater going on too, so that didn't really affect us on that
level.
Yeah,
you're prepared and you're set.
Oh yeah, and we, you know, I had the intuitional hit to put in a lot of extra wood, so we have wood heat and we can cook on a wood stove in the kitchen, plus we have propane to cook on. So, you know, basically the only thing we missed were lights, but we actually had a generator. I kind of liked it the first 3 days. I didn't fire up the generator because I go, well, let's just see what happens. And I love sitting around. I like getting up, you know, in the morning when the sun comes up, and
very good. And it's very healthy.
Yeah, and going to bed at night when the sun goes down. You know, it's like
there's something also about that that's very important for people to do, because all man-made maps point to geographic north, all compasses point to magnetic north, but what does all plants and what do all life point to?
Sun.
The sun.
Yeah.
So when you get on the sun's schedule, not your schedule or your work schedule or your religious schedule, it's the sun's schedule, raw. When you get on that natural cycle of waking up in the morning with the sun and easing off at night when the sun goes down, you will be a lot healthier because you reap the power of whatever you follow. And if you're not following anything, then you're probably not going to have much much power. If you follow the sun, well, you're probably going to get the power of the sun in many different regards.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of, we do a lot of sun gazing here, and a lot of the other practices that we definitely do it early in the morning and late in the evening. You know, not at noon, burn out your retinas on that one.
Don't never look when they say sun gazing, they mean before the sun rises,
yeah,
and just as the sun sets, when they have that twilight time, the golden time, it's called.
Yeah, you got your atmospheric sunglasses to help you out, you know, so you don't have a lot of trouble. But the it's amazing. I've always felt that the sun, you know, my belief is that the sun is conscious, and there's a consciousness that follows the light and the energy and the mass, that everything is conscious. And when you're gazing into the sun like that, you're getting downloaded.
Yeah, literally. There's and starlight too. The twinkling of stars, like cymatics, and every frequency has a shape, and every shape has a specific light associated with it. So you can speak in shapes, sound, light, body language. There's many different forms of communication, and stars and all these lights have a lot of different forms of communication and messages in it. Universal language. And that activates certain things and orders the atoms making up your body. And when they are ordered in a specific way, and you're already ordered, and you allow it to order you further, you can get information. You can just have epiphanies and realizations just out of nowhere because you're allowing it to.
It's kind of interesting, the concept. I was thinking about that. We do a lot of stargazing out here at night, and we pull our lawn chairs up and wait for the UFOs to put on a show. It's pretty much a regular thing. But, that there's always an energy exchange, and the vastness of space at night, you know, going out and staring into the vastness of space, it creates our own vastness, you know, that, and I always tell people, think about that. Whatever you're seeing, you're there.
Correct.
There's a part of you that's there. You know, when you're looking at the sun, there's a part of you that's on the sun. If you're looking at Venus, you know, if you can see it, there's a non-local aspect of yourself that's there. Yeah, and it really trips people out when you start thinking about that. It's like,
here's another trippy thing to think about, is that one of the profound quotes from Walter Russell that really got me thinking and looking into a lot of this stuff is that he said, light doesn't travel at all. It took me a long time to wrap my head around that. Light doesn't travel at all. Well, scientists measure light and waves of light traveling from the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. They measure waves. And the waves are not light. It's a misconception.
Mm-hmm.
Harmonic waves travel from the sun and restructure the mass that's already there. And when mass is restructured so deeply, it will allow you to see the light that's already there, giving the false impression that it's an outside source bouncing off of it. The waves are bouncing off, but the waves are exposing the light that's already there. Mm-hmm. So it's like the bulbs on a Vegas sign.
Mm-hmm.
The bulbs don't actually chase each other going around the sign. The light just presents itself within the bulb. The light doesn't actually move. It's just the wave is moving through the bulb, and you're allowed to see the light. Same principle is that nothing really... The light doesn't really travel. It's an illusion. And the sun creates these harmonic waves. And the harmonic waves are, it's like a harmonic wave generator, and stars. And when we get these waves flowing through you and your eyes and different perspectives on your skin, you can get different energies for sure. And it affects you. It affects different people differently because it depends on how much ordered that you already are, how much meditation you already practice. Because the light of the sun and the light of stars will just order you further.
Yeah, definitely. I've watched that with the solar flares. When the solar flares go off or the coronal mass ejections, you can watch one person will experience extreme anxiety and be all irritable and have all kinds of emotional outbursts. You know, when the energy happens, and another person will get higher in a kite. And just go, all right. You know,
that's interesting.
Like, yeah.
Because I've all of the most recent flares, I've started documenting the dates and realizations that I've had. Because I've had huge epiphanies and breakthroughs and research. And more often than not, they're all correlated with solar flares and huge CMEs or X1 solar flares. And the day that they hit the Earth is a day that a light bulb will flash over my head, figuratively speaking. This is, there's something more to it. There's something going on.
And I think there's highs and lows like a wave that people will get really high and then they'll get really tired, you know. Or, Stanford did some research with monkeys and they exposed them to fluctuations in the magnetic fields and they exhibited behavior from comatose to self-mutilation, you know, depending on what they were doing. So,
that's not good.
No.
Now, what type of magnetic were they? I'd have to look more into this study because there's specific things you can do to alter brain waves.
At like
3 hertz to 8 hertz. Not so good, but you know you can.
I think that's what they're doing. I think they're creating the highs and lows. You know, like and they just like we're flipping out. But I always say we don't have to behave like monkeys. A lot of times when we know the source of it, we can depersonalize it and go, I'm feeling really low right now. That's because we just got hit by a big sun flare and I'm on the low end of the wave. Or I have anxiety right now. Well, that's because you're being activated and you need to go use that energy. Go do something with it, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, different gurus and very spiritual and brilliant people who say when you're having these bad thoughts and you're having a bad day or you're thinking things, always ask yourself and try to remind yourself who is thinking these thoughts, and you have ultimate control over what you think, so it's up to you on which direction you take it. So when you're realizing that you're having a bad thought, just is that really you thinking it? And if it is, then is that what type of person you are? And if not, change it. You have that, and it takes work to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, I've been trying, you know, same thing here with the ranch. You know, I have, there's people here, and the trouble with this place, it's the vortex. And so the energy is just screaming here. It's really high. You first come on the ranch, you feel all blissed out, and you go, I feel like home. And then after about 2 or 3 days, all the lower frequency stuff comes up, you know, and the guilt and the sadness and the childhood traumas and wounds and you know, you'll shift back into the me thing or the process mode, back and forth and back and forth. And it seems like with these waves, they're extremely intensified here at the ranch just because of the nature of the land here. But the only way out is to create some kind of witness or observer to observe, you know, your highs and lows, your sadness and sorrows and your angers and frustrations, and then track them back. Just go, oh, that's interesting. You know, where I'm feeling this energy. Okay, where did this originate?
Exactly. Just reflect on it. That's, it helps a lot, unless you if you submit to it and you just start, you know, delving into that cave, it's not good. But if you just reflect on it, ask questions as to why, where is it coming from, just analyze it. Don't overanalyze it, but just ask why. And it does affect you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it affects everybody else. It's. I remember you were talking about, I can't remember the words you were using, but you were talking about consciousness in one of your other interviews, and that and that consciousness sets up a wave pattern or something kind of a wave.
Yes, like I personally don't think consciousness is a wave, just like light isn't a wave. It's a misinterpretation. Waves are waves, conscious, light is light. But when you order yourself and you have peace, you have harmony, you're happy, or you're just trying to be still, have no thought, it changes things around. It's like blowing a wind. In order to explain this, you have to have sort of a visual. You have to imagine a vortex touching down to the ground. And then you imagine a vortex mirror image coming up from the ground, meeting with that vortex. So you have a vortex, two vortexes touching tips. Mm-hmm. Where those vortexes touch tips, you will see a ring start to expand outward. The more that those vortexes start to go towards each other and flow through each other, the more that ring will expand. Every time we have a thought, it's like creating two vortexes, a mirror image, duality. Mm-hmm. And it blows out a wind, an etheric wind, atomic wind, way beyond, whatever you want to call it. It's affecting things in a radial fashion. It's blowing out a ring of energy like a halo. Mm-hmm. And it happens on all scales with all things. What happens on the macro happens on the micro and all scales in between. So you just apply this dynamic we can see in space, in water, and apply it to consciousness. And every time you have a thought, it's a dual vortex, and it creates this expanding ring, which affects other things. It moves atoms. It affects things. Mm-hmm. If you are thinking in harmony, it will restructure the atomic makeup of things around you, like a cymatic pattern. Mm-hmm. If you have sand on a plate, you put that plate on a speaker, and then you blast the sound at a speaker, boop, boop, put out a specific sound. Every harmonic note has a specific shape, beautiful geometric, symmetrical shapes. It's art, mm-hmm. because this energy is art. It's sacred geometry, sacred artwork. It's one and the same. You can't have free energy without art. You can't mm-hmm. have these UFOs and flying craft without it being an art. Mm-hmm. And when you think in harmony, you are creating art all around you, and yeah. it creates art in atoms all around you.
And you know, to be the devil's advocate here, you know, that when you're in disharmony, you're creating another kind of art, and that is going out and affecting everyone around you.
Well, yeah, like Picasso or something.
Yeah.
Different kind of art, but yeah still art to somebody, I guess.
Yeah. But it doesn't... doesn't feel too good, some of it, but
it's because it's literally when I have a chill go up my spine and I get goosebumps, mm-hmm. I associate that with electrical conductivity, because electrical conductivity, superconduction, is extremely cold. When you get a chill up your spine and the hair stand on your end, it's like mm-hmm. static electricity. It's cold mm-hmm. energy. So there's something going on there, and mm-hmm. that's like kundalini or tantric energy or orgone, ether, chi, whatever we want to call it. There's a science behind it, the science of spirituality, the science of geometry mm-hmm. on the atomic level.
I know the Hawaiians call it chicken skin. they go, ooh, I got chicken skin. You know, when you say something really powerful or it's something they really need to hear, and it's almost like their spirit jumps in or something, I don't know, or there's an energy there that's really high energy that you're tapping into. They it's funny. They go, oh, I got chicken skin on that one. I need to listen.
Or you hear a really beautiful song or something that you like, mm-hmm. or even a beautiful sunset or something that takes your breath away.
Yeah,
it's like the energy itself is it's so powerful. It's. Mm-hmm. It's an overflow of emotion, and when our body can't express an emotion, we either laugh or cry or yell, or we have to blurt mm-hmm. something out to equalize that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm fascinated by this. I know you've done some research into this, and I'm interested in. I've always felt all thoughts, and I might be using the wrong terminology here, but all thoughts have a frequency or a vibration to them, or I don't know what word you'd use for that, but you know, there's lower frequency or lower vibrational thoughts that are like guilt and anger and sadness and victim and all those programs, you know. And then there's the higher frequencies of love and joy and bliss and service to others. And I know the me always drops down into the other program. You know,
I think it's the other way around. Closer to zero is more love. Closer to stillness is more peace. More mm-hmm. that your thoughts are moving around in an angered motion and all chaotic is the further away that you are. But we have the same terminology. It's just, I think we're flipped.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I shouldn't say high. No, well, maybe.
Maybe it's not. I don't know. We just have to include the possibility that all the stuff we're talking about, raising your vibration, should be the other way around.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's what I was trying to get to, the terminology. So basically, the lower the frequency, the closer you are to the still point or the void or the God within or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And so it does need to be flipped in terminology. I've been having trouble with that in my own mind because I know in particle physics, the higher, I don't want to say the higher, it's really hard to flip this around in my mind, but well, let's say I can't even say that. I guess it would be the lower the dimension, the smaller the particle.
Yes. Yes, the lower the scale.
Yeah, but we're actually programmed to think the higher the dimension, the bigger everything is.
Correct.
You know, that's
it. We're taught the exact opposite of everything that that nature is about.
Yeah, and then I keep trying to flip that in my own mind. You know, from extensive programming, you know, that has been put in there and learning the new physics and everything else, I'm going, wait a second, less is more, slow exactly. Everything down, be still.
It's like a big pendulum. The bigger the pendulum, the bigger the wave, or the bigger the gong that you hit, the bigger the energy. But the longer it's going to take for that energy to present itself. So when you hit a huge gong, it might take a few seconds for you to start hearing it, and then it rattles, and then it really starts rattling, and then it gets really loud.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have to have faith that the sound is going to come. You have to keep it up. Because once you're dealing with these energies on a very, very small scale, it just takes a while for things to present themselves up the scales.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep it up with repetition. Like a routine or a frequency. And anything that you're doing, as long as you're maintaining it with a specific wavelength, you're doing something, anything, it's going to create a wave of energy. It's going to be beneficial. The longer and slower that you do something, the more energy you're going to reap. Because less. Mm-hmm.
You know, that is definitely true with Yigong. It's when you're doing Yigong or Qigong or whatever, automatically we start speeding up. We start moving faster and faster, and you have to train yourself, whoa, slow it down, you know, less is more, slow it down, and then that's where the real power comes. It's from actually not the fast movements, but from the slow movements.
If the slow movements have the power, you still have to train with the fast movements to deal with the fast movements of others.
Yeah.
But the power comes from the slow waves, the long, slow waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so consciousness creates order in waves.
And I know in healing that it's the slow waves that you use for healing.
That's correct.
Yeah, and everybody's thinking the higher the frequency, oh, yeah, I can really kick up the energy here and heal this person. You're just going to fry them.
You know? Well, what you got to do, like with Rife's technology or Dr. Bob Beck's circuit, mm-hmm. you can use high frequencies, but then you have to use a shorter duty cycle. Mm-hmm. You have to lower the percentage that wave is actually on. So if you have like a 2-second pulse, you'd better have that 2-second pulse actually on for 2% of that. So mm-hmm. you're dealing with different percentages and fractions of waves. And when you do that and you fraction off the waves, then you start to start to do some funny things.
Yeah.
From what I have found, it's square waves in 8% duty cycles that this particular machine with this magnetic pulser I was looking at was very effective. 8% duty cycles in square waves was pulsing these frequencies. Any given wave, 432 hertz, a million hertz, whatever hertz you do, it's always going to be 8% duty cycle for that particular device.
Have you, I don't know if you've met up with Burl Payne by any chance.
No, actually that name doesn't even ring a bell. The work might be familiar, but the name doesn't. How do you spell that?
I think it's B-U-R-Y-L-E. I'm pretty sure it's P-A-I-N-E. I might be getting that wrong. I can look that up.
Hey, what's he about?
But, well, he's created a lot of, he's really into the harmonics of all the planets and actually creating these pulse generators and magnetic healing devices and just amazing. Like these donuts, you put on your foot, you mess your ankle up, and you put this donut on it and it's pulsing this kind of a magnetic pulse through your foot, and it's amazing. All of a sudden the pain just goes away, and it creates a field of healing that things just heal really fast.
It increases the blood circulation for one thing immediately.
Yeah.
I tested this on myself. Hands and feet were very warm. I was using my magnetic pulser to test on some water, and then it was rainy outside, and drizzly. It's like 42 degrees, and I'm normally always cold.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going out to walk my dogs, and it felt like a summer day. I was just really happy, feeling great. Associating it with the magnetic pulser? Don't know, but yeah. It's just a coincidence. And I don't really believe in coincidence, so it's a synchronicity. So
yeah.
So we don't know. We can't directly say that this is because of that, but I found that there's some interesting correlations to be further studied.
yeah. I know there's some ones that run a lot of juice through them.
I have one that runs 50,000 Gauss.
Uh-huh.
It's huge magnetic field for 50 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. There's so much stuff to be tested. I built these Rodin coils. I built this 2-foot woven Rodin coil, like these two copper wires I wove together like a wicker basket around this donut, this lifesaver ring called the lifesaver coil. And same thing, I connect it to a magnetic pulser, or you can connect it to a software program on your computer. Mm-hmm. As long as you have an amplifier and you're good to go, and a battery, you can pulse these magnetic waves through this pulser. I still have yet to grow some crystals in the center to see if it changes the density or the shape or the rate of growth or something. I have tested it with some small plants, and there does seem to be some effect of rate of growth for the better. Just you can submerge these things underwater and play sounds through these coils. If there's a magnet in the center of the coil, it's a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking you can attract fish, or you can deter sharks if you play certain sounds through the coil in the water. And there's a lot of different stuff you can do.
Yeah, I've got a couple friends that are playing with that stuff. They're creating these torsion fields with these. They basically a donut, with copper. Looks like a copper wrapped donut.
If you the more order that you have, the more benefit you'll see. So this man named Marco Rodin developed this system that you geometrically wind this wire around the donut rather than just going loop to loop to loop through it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a specific way you do it. Wrap it every 150 degrees, and it makes the star pattern out of the wires. And when you're done wrapping it, it looks like the wires are forming water going down a drain.
Hmm.
And you can have a magnet in the center and pulse through the wires and get magnets to spin hundreds of thousands of RPM.
Wow.
I've seen, there's videos on YouTube, a brilliant guy named Russ Grease, RWG Research, who's working on Stan Myers technology and all sorts of brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's too bad about Stan.
Well, we're getting it. We're getting the technology back, so we're great. It's up to us, and we're bringing it to fruition. So,
hey, well, I've got a big old Dodge truck out here that could really use some water technology on it, because it's a, you know, it's a gas sucker.
We're getting there, buddy.
But
it's happening. It's happening sooner than we think.
Oh yeah, it's coming out everywhere in garages and all over other. Countries, I'm just hearing incredible things about the counter gravity and anti gravity and these 0-point energy devices as well as the water technologies.
Compare all of them, and what do they look like? Art.
Yeah,
they're all beautiful to look at. They're all symmetrical, and most of the time they're all donuts.
Yeah,
they're all toroids or rings, and there's something about rings and creating geometries and tangential fields and geometry. It's about order. The more order that you have, it will yield to your benefit. And compare all these things. They all look beautiful, and they're all very ordered.
I know a lot of these devices I've seen, one of the problems they have with them is not generating the energy and getting them spinning. It's keeping them together and not exploding, you know, or spinning so fast they just blow up, or they end up blowing holes through your roof, taking off, and they can't stop them.
No, it's that's part of the thing. Is like when you're hitting a giant gong, that wave takes a while to present itself, and I'm thinking people who are experimenting with these technologies don't realize that aspect, so they hit it with energy, and then they hit it with energy again. Because they hit it at energy again, trying to think that it's not working, but you have to wait.
Yeah.
And when you wait, be patient. It might take an hour, but once it starts, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it too much, your machine's going to break down.
Yeah.
So, but you have to gauge it and spend a lot of time gauging that stuff. But there's there's different stuff like Rafael Morgado's MYT engine, or John Searle's SEG magnetic converter. All these things, all the parts moving in the same direction, same time, same speed. They're the same size. Just more order, more power.
Mm-hmm. Now I know I've been working a lot with Walter and Ralph Ring and those guys, and I know they have their pods and their little technologies going. I don't know how much you want to talk about that. They said it was okay to talk about it to me, but I still have mixed emotions about going too deep into these things just because of what I've seen. I've had some very close friends, actually end up dead, you know, and in a,
Why I say, you know, bless them, and all the more reason to vindicate them and get the information out so that they won't die in vain. So these people, we can open source this information, get it to the people so they can start applying it to their own lives and experiment for yourselves. Mm-hmm. Don't wait for somebody else to do it, some scientist, because they're not going to do it. They don't believe. We have to do it.
Yeah. I have my dream here is to create a total sovereign, self-sufficient place here. It's a retreat center, and most of it's created, but it has a few missing elements. But to even have my own power source here and a place like a template where people could come and go, you know what, this is the way we should be living.
Yes.
You know, this is, and look, this stuff is real. Here's a template. It's working. Have everything organic, you know, and growing huge gardens, you know, and everything.
Practicing
just
what
vital.
You preach.
Exactly.
Being a living example.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, focusing, you could call it selfish, because you're focusing on the self, but you got to take care of yourself before you can take care of others.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to put that mask on your own face before your kid's next to you on the airplane.
Yeah.
You have to take care of yourself first to a certain degree before you can help others.
Yeah.
And when you help yourself enough and you order your own life, other people will see it and ask you, how is it possible that you're living that way? And you should tell them. Teach them so that they can apply it to their life, and then they can do the same thing, and a chain reaction will hopefully be take a place. So it's great that people like you and other people are doing that, and have already done that Be a template and be the living example.
Yeah, it's the same with the UFO stuff. Everybody goes, well, prove it to me. And I go, no. And they go, what do you mean? I just said, look, this is a place where you can come and have your own experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if you have a bad attitude, that's what you're going to walk away with. So
see, that's a lot of people approach me the same way with, prove me this information. I want you to convince me. Like, well, that's not my job here. I mean, I'm not even here to convince myself. Being convinced of something means that somebody might have swayed you to their side of the argument, even though the information might not be accurate. Yeah. But being convinced and realizing something for yourself is two different things. Convincing is an outside influence. Realization is within.
Yeah, exactly. I always tell people it needs to be your own experience, and then nobody can take that away from you. They'll try. You know, they'll do all they can to make you think you didn't see what you saw or experience what you experienced. But, you know, the bottom line is if you just tell somebody something, then what's that? That's just a story.
Yeah, they have no context to know how it's possible.
Yeah, but once they experience it or see it themselves, then that's a much deeper story. Now it's their story. It's not just your story.
Well, it's something they can actually relate to in context. So if they have no means to do so, then they're not. Of course, they're not going to believe. Why should they?
Yeah,
they've been trained not to.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen technologies, and I've actually have videos of these technologies running, anti-gravity, counter-gravity, enormous amounts of fuel energy being generated. I've sat with Walter Rosenthal. Unfortunately, he's dead now, but he was a NASA rocket man, and quite a few other people in a room where this was demonstrated, and with all these people. So to me, it's like being involved in that and seeing it firsthand and touching it and feeling it and you know, plugging everything I could into this thing to kill it. Didn't even phase it, I mean, we had so many power strips with giant drills and everything running, you know, sanders, people standing there kept
because
flicking.
It's like digging a hole in the beach.
Yeah.
Once you reach a certain depth of order, once you reach that certain scale, does not matter how much you try to shovel out of that hole. The surrounding water will fill in the hole faster than you could possibly take it out. So the energy will be supplied faster than your drills can take it out.
Exactly. And it was just amazing seeing that they're ice cold and everything else. Well, that whole program got shut down real fast, you know, due to, you know, attacks on the guy's family, and his lab was blown up. And I mean, I was in the middle of that. I had threats and, you know, almost getting kidnapped a couple times and having foreknowledge. Yeah. But, you know, knowing what the intent of the people you're dealing with was, you know, having that inside voice was really good, and avoiding some of those things. But I think that's the only reason why I'm still around today is because I did trust the inner guidance, and I didn't show up in certain places that.
Oh, yeah. I know. I've seen it firsthand. I've spent time with Dr. Greer in Mount Shasta. I spent time with other people looking at very, very strange things. Some of it was up in Washington State where you are, deep in the woods. And stuff is just there's another world there. People you can acknowledge if you choose to do so, but it's got to be on its time, not yours. You're not going to just look up in the sky during a work day and, oh, nothing's there, so therefore it doesn't exist. Take your time out of your life, waste your time to see what is possibly out there. And the more that you seek will determine what you can find. If you say there's nothing there, then to me that means you really didn't seek at all.
Well, that's the reality you're creating, you know, or the reality you've chosen to create.
Or you did seek, but you're not allowing that information to enter you, and you're not comprehending it. Because a lot of people can research and research for years and just not see it. One person can see a drop of water on a lake and understand the universe. It's just depending on how much you allow it to enter you.
You know, a good example of that is we had two things happen up here, or more than that, but I'm just using these two examples. One is we had a really clear group up here that was, very cohesive and everything. And then we had these camera guys come up from LA, and this massive ship just powered up, flew right overhead. It was bright orange and gold, and then it turned and it went up. Everybody jumped up and goes, "Whoa, check it out," and we're pointing up at it. These other two cameramen were looking right at it. They didn't see it.
Huh.
And they go, you know, they said that was probably the most well-orchestrated jump up and point, or there was something there. But the way everybody was reacting, you know, they knew something was there, but they couldn't see it.
That's frustrating for people.
Yeah,
it's frustrating because it's like, is everybody around me fooling me? Is everybody around me just pulling my chain? No, man, they can see it and you can't for some reason.
Yeah, and it's frequency specific. But it's really interesting. They also did another thing, which proved to me that they can choose either they choose who they show themselves to, or they can, or it's all about that person's frequency. But we had a whole group in a row. And all of a sudden, this huge ship came down on the mountain, and it was blinking really bright, and it came. It was on the mountain, and the people in the middle were going, "Whoa, check it out! Whoa, check it out!" And the people on both ends couldn't see it, and so I go, "What's up with that?" And I'm filming it, and I have the thing on film, so I'm looking at it and I'm seeing it the whole time, and then I'm watching. It goes, "Oh, it went out." The people in the middle of the group go, "Oh, it went out. It stopped." And then the people on the right side go, no, I see it. I see it. Yeah, it is there, like this. And then the people on the right side go, no, it stopped. It went out. And then the people on the far left side go, no, it's going. It's going. They go, no, it went out. No, it's going. And these guys are like, and then all of a sudden it would go out. And they go, yeah, it's out. I don't see it anymore. And then the people in the middle would see it again.
I was in Mount Shasta, the same type of thing happened. It was from 11:30 at night to about 1 in the morning. Mm-hmm. These lights just came on, look like coming out of the mountain.
Yeah.
And then we assumed to be about a 700 to 800 foot long disc, judging it from the distance and our eye level. If it was a few miles line sight from where we were, doing all the necessary measurements we could possibly take.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at it through infrared night scopes, thermal imagery, digital cameras, regular binoculars.
Mm-hmm.
After a half an hour, this thing just disappeared from the visible light spectrum, but could still be seen on the infrared cameras and the thermal.
Mm-hmm.
And then disappeared from that after a while. So a kid, obviously not a fire, not headlights, because something 8,000 feet up on a mountain where there's no roads, no nothing.
Yeah.
And then it could see this thing clear as day through the night scope.
Mm-hmm.
Clear thing just hovering silently, feet above the ground, turning, lights all around the rim with one column of vertical strip of lights on what I assume to be the back of it. This thing is just hovering and turning and unbelievably cool. I mean, this thing obviously not using gas.
Yeah.
And I want one.
Yeah, me too. I always tell me, give me one with a teleporter and a full bank of lasers, and I can straighten this planet out real fast. But it's probably why I don't have one.
I just want to go see my friends and see the world and travel and be free.
Yeah, exactly.
No passports, no insurance, none of that.
Yeah.
Life.
Yeah, no, you don't have to get your DNA scattered, you know, walking through those crazy machines they've got. But, I think that's what it's all about. It's, you know, the bottom line, you really look at about this, that the more access we have to this technology, the less we can be controlled.
So we have to get these information on how to do it and what energy is, what mm-hmm. magnets are, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So that people can build their own understanding new dynamics of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand is that electricity is the ordered flow of heat on any given scale. The smaller the scale, the more electricity or plasma that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. There's no limit to the amount of conductivity a piece of mass or any given object can have, because there's no limit to the amount of order that you can consciously create in it.
Mm-hmm.
So the more order that you can create through things like John Searle's magnetization process, or, you know, using Andrea Rossi's new method of what they're calling low energy nuclear reactions.
Mm-hmm.
I just call it alchemy, because pretty much that's what it is. You're just mm-hmm. eliminating the heat from a nuclear reaction using other frequencies, low energy, mm-hmm. low wave.
Well, I know we can convert every one of our nuclear reactors on even a primitive scale to be completely safe, so they're not ticking time bombs.
Yeah, it's and called disabling them completely.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that, you know, there would be no waste. There's other technologies that wouldn't create any nuclear waste. There's technologies I know of that are built right now. You could go in there and pull out all the nuclear nonsense and plug this device into the generators and generate all the electricity you want, fuelessly. There are negotiations being made on this, you know, that to do this. But I'm always wondering, you know, because we've got these coal industry, the gas, oil boys, you know, the fracking going on, and all this has got such huge, a huge club, you know, that they're wielding in the financial arena and the political arena and everything else. You know, what's it going to take to, but this club is actually going to end up hitting them right in the face. You know, because what they're doing is unsustainable, and it has really dire consequences, both planetary and you know, individually as well, you know, as far as what they're doing. But, boy, I just wonder how many times they're going to have to hit themselves in the face, or they're going to have to see their families or friends die or whatever until they let go of this program of just controlling and suppressing, you know, all of these technologies and healing technologies as well.
One thing I think we can do is just act like it's already over. Mm-hmm. Put the mentality out there and psychologically say, oh, what, you still believe that? Dang, that's like so 20th century. Wow, I thought we were past that already. And if everybody already had that attitude, then it would change people and step everybody else's mentality up.
Mm-hmm.
So just act like it's already common knowledge. Of course, cold fusion. Oh, free energy, we had that 10 years ago. What's the matter with you? Where have you been?
Yeah, I think it's funny. I won't mention any names, but there's this one guy that's saying that we're actually going to the moon to mine the moon and in search for anti-gravity and anti-gravity technologies. And so supposedly we have these giant bulldozers up there type of things, you know, earth movers, things like that, searching, you know, digging around, searching for this ancient technology or whatever.
Well, they're probably doing something, because in order to get those bulldozers up there, I guarantee you they didn't use rockets or shuttles.
that you know was what exactly I mean?
They
what
already,
I said.
They're not searching for anti-gravity on the moon. They already got there.
Yeah, that's, I can't believe nobody's seen through this, you know, like, like if you got a big old earth mover up on that moon, you didn't do it with a shuttle. You didn't do it with a rocket. You already got anti-gravity or counter-gravity or whatever you want to call it. But
well, I think the Nazis already developed this in the 40s with their Bell experiments and their occult sciences. And they already knew about all that stuff. Walter Russell's work was well known back then.
Mm-hmm.
Well known. But his work, John Keeley's work, and Nikola Tesla were swept under the rug. They don't teach it anymore.
Oh, yeah. I know German scientists that this is just accepted to them. All these technologies, they go, I don't get it. You know what?
And Russia and parts of Japan, Australia have some really brilliant people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all over the world, people, it's self-evident already, while other people are still ridiculing it or violently opposing it.
Mm-hmm. It's very obvious. I also found out too, some information that they actually had the atomic bomb. Germany did, and they decided not to use it because it was so destructive. They didn't even know if it would ignite the entire planet, you know, and create a cascade effect that would just...
Heard that, but then they tried it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing, is they feared that it would ignite the entire atmosphere, mm-hmm. everybody dead. And they did it anyway?
No, I mean, our guys didn't. I mean, our guys did it. The Germans didn't, you know.
Well, that's, yeah, but there's a guy named Jim Mars who wrote that book, Rise of the Fourth Reich. He's detailing about how the Nazis had developed this technology and supposedly fooled the world. And President Truman had done some sort of deal to get this nuclear technology in exchange for letting some of the Nazis go.
Maybe Hitler included. Yeah, Project Paperclip. They went in there and they grabbed them all. Russia grabbed some. We grabbed the others, and they came here. And basically, our whole NASA and our whole rocket program is...
Exactly. It was called NACA before, N-A-C-A. But now that has changed. And you look it up, and you're not going to really find much on NACA. Hitler started that, and the same people ran it. And Walt Disney funded it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess Walt Disney actually funded a lot of Hitler's programs.
It was all Nazi, all the cartoons.
So did Bush.
About our friend, the atom, and talking about all these singly charged particles and nucleus to atoms and all this fallacious nonsense. Mm-hmm. It's not true. It's all Nazi propaganda from the 40s. From Hitler and Walt Disney, and you look at Nikola Tesla and Walter Russell saying, hello, hello, over here.
Yeah.
All this, hundreds of years of research to counter any claim that the mainstream has. What about us? And slowly but surely, those guys were phased out because there wasn't as enough money in all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just see that... my solace is I love this ninth wave of unity consciousness that's just barreling through the planet right now, and it's really disrupting that old program, the old tyranny me program, enslavement through dependency, is just coming unglued, and knowing that there is a higher evolution coming in and a shift, also too having firsthand knowledge of some of these tyrants that people don't even know about that are on really high levels of control are actually dying. I mean, they're dropping like flies. So,
well, they got to be at least 80 years old by
now. Yeah. And what I'm seeing is energetically, they are just not matching, the evolution the program.
The weird thing is that when you start to utilize these technologies of these low waves, different energies, magnetic fields, whatever you want to call it, it changes your mentality. It changes your physical state. Mm-hmm. It takes dis-ease and makes ease. Mm-hmm. It takes disorder and creates order. Sickness to health, sadness to happiness, all the things that we experience today, it reverts and reverses. So if these people have this technology and they're using it, why wouldn't their consciousness be changed from utilizing the technology? Yeah. And then all of a sudden they feel love in their hearts and give it to the rest of humanity. They must not be using it then.
Yeah.
They must. Some of these people must just be putting it on a shelf and making money off the gas. Because I think if they were really using it, they would have a different mentality. Because that's what this stuff does.
Yeah, it shifts you more into service, gets you out of that other program. The I heard it on the inside is they did develop this one ship that they had, that they would kick up the frequencies on it, I guess, and it would go from physical matter to an energy to a light principle, basically, and jump.
What it's doing is it's ordering the atomic mass through harmonics on the ship, and then it's would make it look transparent because everything is supposed to be a clear crystal. Mm-hmm. Every element has its ideal crystalline structure, but nature only provides us with order on certain scales, but everything wants to be a crystal. And when you start using harmonics on different scales, you start turning things into liquid crystals and it starts to look like holograms. Mm-hmm. And then you start to order it so much where it starts to glow and ionize and lift, become etherically buoyant.
Yeah. And they said the problem they had with this was whoever got on that ship were changed.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't get them to do anything negative anymore. They couldn't get them to...
That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly. So they go, God, what do we do? We have this incredible technology. We can jump to Alpha Centauri if we want. But the problem is when we get in it and run this thing, Our whole program.
We're not mean people anymore.
Yeah, our whole program just got screwed. You know, like so it is kind of interesting. Now this is another interesting story. I was told that the Palladians actually do this. They take their kids, you know, at a very young age, and they take them on these ships, and they kick the frequencies up. And what they said is they go into like a samadhi state where it's like a near-death experience, where they have totally gone from a physical reality to a light principle. And it's like having a near-death experience. And when they do that, when they come back, they see the wholeness, the oneness. They see they're just all blissed out, and they just want to serve. And then they give them whatever they need to reach their highest potential in whatever their unique purpose is, and then they automatically give back to the whole. And I think of this, I go, God, can you imagine the evolutionary jump we would take if we had an educational process like that?
Yeah, that's an education system, not a school system.
Yeah, yeah, that's not a robot.
That's a matrix download for sure.
Yeah, and you know, now we're just trying to create good little consumer robots and
little regurgitators and button pushers.
And, you know, everything they eat is actually, you know, I just say it's turning them into neutered little zombies, you know, with all the fluoride and the chemicals and the...
Oh, it allows for different parasites to breed of different sorts. And there's a... Boy, that's a whole nother show altogether. But yeah. There's some nasty stuff that gets to flourish from creating an environment like that in your own body. It's not good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and... You know, and unfortunately, that's the way it is. I mean, the power elite, whatever you want to call them, they look at us as cattle, and they want us controlled, and they want the herd, you know, to maintain.
See, they're trying to create their order from the outside in, rather than teaching people to provide their own order from the inside out, which affects other things in positive ways, rather than trying to influence somebody from the outside, which affects everything negatively.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a science to it on the spiritual level, on the scientific level, on the atoms to light, every aspect of life. You can apply chaos and order, and just from the outside in or from the inside out. You want from the inside out.
Yeah, and you know, I see that's what we're, you know, a lot of us are doing that in our everyday life. We're trying to do everything from the outside in. Yeah. You know, I'll be happy.
The yang. We want the yin.
Yeah, I'll be happy if you do this. I'll be happy if I get this. I'll be happy if I need this to be happy. You
or
know?
if it's conditional. We want unconditional.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's easier said than done. You can never achieve it 100%, or you can never achieve 0%. Mm-hmm. You can constantly strive for either, and which direction you go is up to you. But just realize the higher aspects of life or the lower aspects of life, there's a different reality. When you just take time to slow down and you take your time and you meditate or do whatever you want to call it, you find your zone, your zen, and you get on the schedule with the sun at the same time that you start doing this, that's when you start to feel the differences in your life and see it. But it takes a while for that atomic scale to build up in your life. It will happen. You have to establish a routine.
It's literally
a wave. You're establishing waves of energy by doing routines and doing certain things certain times a day. Mm-hmm. And the more that you you do it at the same time a day, it could be anything, whatever your ritual or whatever your prayer or whatever it is, if the more that you do it the same time with order in accordance to the sun, you're going to see more benefit. If it's a machine, if it's your life, try it out. Mm-hmm. Just try it.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about that just yesterday about car karma. You know, you like if you treat your car with love and respect and keep all the oils up and keep it clean and you put your intention on it, I mean, they run so much better.
Oh yeah, you'll get every parking spot too.
Yeah.
And well, I don't know about that, but
but if you ignore it and go, this is just some material thing and I'm not a materialist or whatever, then it dies. You know, it's going to live a real short life. And it's the same thing with a house. You know, if you don't give a damn about your house, it automatically will start basically decomposing. You know, it'll start.
That's another thing I want to get into real quickly, is feng shui. and the law of order. Feng Shui literally means wind and water in Chinese. Mm-hmm. And there is laws of fluid mechanics and how things flow in a room or in a tank of water or in space. It's all the same thing, just different scales of fluids and different scales of movements and winds. And when you orient things in a specific fashion in your room, in geometric orientations, the wind will blow in your room in certain ways. Mm-hmm. You can round out all the corners in your home, and it will make for better wind flow and better energy flow. Or you can do that on the atomic level and magnetize a material, create specific alignments, and geometrically order these things on the atomic level and create atomic feng shui. That's what a magnet is any material that is aligned to allow for energies to blow through it. And when your room is aligned in that way, cleanliness is next to godliness, and godliness is zero. Godliness is clean, ordered, ease. And when you are doing that and consciously engineering it in your home, the smaller the scale that you do it collectively, the more power you reap. You build one pyramid, cool. You build a million little pyramids making up that one pyramid, wow, that's even better. If you zoom in on any one of those pyramids and it's made up of a bunch of others, now the more order and the more power. Mm-hmm. Pretty much the whole concept.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I've had this, I just keep getting this prompting, and I don't know what it is, to create this giant copper coil that is like, you know, two vortexes connected together, bury one of them in the ground.
Yeah.
And have it come up and then hit that zero point or whatever in the middle and then expand it out going up into the air. And I don't know why I keep seeing this. I just got this real strong drive to do this. I don't know what it's going to create. I don't know.
Try the other way around. Having the two vortexes with open ends touching. So you have the base of a cone at the ground coming up to a point.
Uh-huh.
And then below the ground, you have sort of like a same thing, a cone then going to a point under the ground. So like a diamond shape. That is what Pierre Luigi Agena, a guy in Italy, they called the Tesla or the Wilhelm Reich of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
He built this thing called the earthquake neutralizer.
Hmm.
And it's exactly what you're describing. It's made of aluminum, and it was a cone or a diamond shape, but you only saw the top part of the cone sticking out of the ground. It was very specific colors in orientation, making a spiral, two vortexes, and Pierre Luigi Agena said that earthquakes were the result of a magnetic imbalance between the earth and sun. And when you build these coils, it allows for the energy to flow a path of least resistance because you engineer it, and it will reduce earthquakes.
Yeah, maybe that's why I've been getting that vision to build this thing.
But I don't know what the inverse would do. It would reflect the sun's energy and reflect back the earth's energy if you did it the opposite way, like two open cones rather than two closed cones. So I don't know. You'd have to experiment. But if you did a bunch of little ones together, making up a big one, that'd be even more effective. The smaller the collective order that you create, the more effective it's going to be, whatever it is.
I'm just wondering what would happen, you know, with between the buried one and the one above air, you know, and have it made out of copper with, you know, maybe some kind of insulating thing holding up wood or whatever. And wood would still generate energy, though, probably. But
if you have the top, if you have the top half copper, do the bottom half zinc. You want to use the positive and the negative. Don't just have it all copper. Do half and half. The base or the negative should always be silver or zinc. And the positive should always be gold or copper.
Well, that goes back to the Egyptian rods.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's basically what they are, is to balance out your energies. And I know Valerie, is it Uvarov, I think? Yeah. Who is the Russian scientist doing a lot of pyramid. I think he was head of the Russian Academy of Science or something. They've done a lot of work on pyramids, and they actually, you know, they brought these rods out, exactly the same rods that the pharaohs held,
yep.
and did a lot of research on it, and they found out that that basically a lot of people that are engaging higher conscious energy were having all these imbalances happening, which were creating disease, mm-hmm. and that these rods would actually help balance out their body so they would not, you know.
Well, it's like a Tesla coil. Every specific coil has its own resonant frequency. Mm-hmm. Every person has their own frequency, and every person needs to be tuned a different way. And when you have these copper and zinc, or you have gold and silver, or even alloys of them both, gold, mm-hmm. gold, copper, and then zinc, silver, alloy, always have the positive right, negative left, and pay attention to the hieroglyphics because it's all written down there already. Mm-hmm. You just have to look at it in that context, but it teaches us already, and you can seriously tune yourself according to these technologies, but there's that's a whole other conversation too, because there's different scales of tuning. Now you can tune it to the solfeggio scale, you can tune it mm-hmm. to the Pythagorean tuning, or there's different scales of tuning, and you have to do it a specific way. There's a code. The Egyptians had that, and people are figuring it out now. And again, I have a lot more information on that, but that's another show altogether.
Yeah, another 2 hours.
Yeah.
On that. And so are you working to create devices that would utilize those codes, or those hidden technologies that you're discovering, you know, with the ancient Egyptian technologies?
Yes, I am, and there are very important aspects about harmonics and very important aspects about nature, and putting these things together in certain ways. It's very important work, and I have been working on that with some very other brilliant people. Mm-hmm. And it looks like we're figuring it out, and people as a whole are starting to really figure stuff out, and it's only a matter of time before we all just get it and mm-hmm. start telling each other, because we're that close. I'd say by the end of the year, people should be starting to build their own stuff.
It does. I mean, that's information I'm getting. I'm just getting overwhelmed with emails with people saying, I got it, you know, especially the water technologies those kind of technologies. And some people, a few people are generating, you know, some pretty substantial power out of some of
those. I know some really, really fantastic experiments and projects going on right now all over the world. There's specific people, but we're getting it, and mm-hmm. stuff, the weird things are being generated with these machines. People are talking as a people now, and it looks like it's going to be happening from the ground up, not trickling from the experts down.
Yeah.
Because these people, we're doing it in our homes, we're doing it in our rooms with pieces from Radio Shack, mm-hmm. Real cheap, just proving the concepts. So it's really embarrassing for these big guys, because when kids are doing stuff in their own rooms and figuring stuff out in these codes, mm-hmm. That these billion-dollar boys can't seem to acknowledge, it's, you know, they're going to be banished.
Yeah,
we're going to do it.
Yeah, it seems like they're trapped in their own program. It's like they created this program of control and disinformation, and then they've educated people in this program, and now they've trapped themselves.
And they have indoctrinated people to their program.
Yeah, and so you have all these talking heads up there, these bot scientists, trying to tell you that you can't do this or this is impossible, and then you have these devices that are
proving. But then again, they are correct, because they're only talking about their scale.
Uh-huh.
And when they're talking about their scale, they are correct.
Yeah.
But you have to acknowledge, once you start opening up atomic scales, your laws are not exactly the same anymore. So they are correct. All the mm-hmm. measurements they're taking are correct. But when they start making up equations to explain how and why they are able to take their measurements, that's not exactly correct. Mm-hmm. When they start ridiculing things and saying, this is how it is on our scale, that's it. There is no other scales. Like E mm-hmm. equals MC squared and all that nonsense. That's only talk about one particular scale. but it's misinterpretations.
And, you know, yeah, that's, it's just on every level. You know, the people I have on the show, I have some of the cutting edge archaeologists and historians and people in the legal fields. It's amazing. Every field, it seems like, is just getting turned upside down. And I just feel like it's just this huge higher consciousness and energy, or the higher fields of wisdom and knowledge are pressing in really hard, and it's just coming through whoever's going to attune to it, you know, and pull from it.
And allow it.
And allow it to happen.
We've mastered as a people the outward. We've mastered the math of our scale and above, and the outer space. We know how things work, how things move, but explanations about gravity and light and all that stuff are completely wrong. And that has to do with the inner frequencies and charge forces, not density, and magnetism, not this and that. And there's a whole other dynamic that once you acknowledge the inner, the yin, you can explain the so-called mysteries of the quantum universe, of the galactic. It's not mysterious. Once you start acknowledging the atomic order and all these other people's work.
I think it's the mystery is that we've just been taught wrong and sent in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it's traditions of ignorance. Somebody a long time ago came up with the best possible explanation of that era, and everybody accepted it. But then new information came about, and everybody loved that one genius and put him on an infallible pedestal, discounted everything else that came out since then. So it's a matter of realizing that people aren't as 100% accurate as they might seem, even though that they are very famous and their work is very credible and important today.
And
that's how we got to where we are.
Yeah. But plus they wrote a book, you know. It's usually they wrote a book, and anything that's contrary to that book is not going to be getting out until they die. You know?
And even still, 400 years later, those books are still, you know, they were great. They were great back then, but we have a little more to work with today, so we got to step our game up.
Yeah, we call it recycled ignorance. You know, we're working off of recycled ignorance on almost every level, and that's the kind of mindset we have to get into. Is like, well, who says this is the way it is? You know, let's test it. Let's try other
alternatives. Well, I say it's different. Yeah. So who's with me?
Yeah.
I make sense to me, so it must be right, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just watching this whole thing unfold, and you know, it's undeniable. I think we're headed for a huge new renaissance on every level. And
it's already here. It's just a matter of admitting that it's already here. And it's been here.
Yeah, and every field is going to get turned upside down.
Oh boy!
You know, and it needs to. I mean, we've been stuck for way too long.
And we have the alternatives. It's not like we're pulling the rug out from other people's feet and saying, you know, everything you know is wrong. We are saying everything you know is wrong, and here's the right stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not just taking the candy from a baby, we're replacing it with a popsicle.
Yeah, and giving, here it is. Giving them a solution, you know.
Just preach, you know, fear-mongering, you know, people like Alex Jones telling us all about the problems. That's great. But if you talk about the problem, offer a solution for each problem you talk about.
Yeah,
so offer the other side, too.
Yeah, that's what I've always said. Okay, it's all about solutions. And again, going back to a template, you know, we've been doing, you know, trial and error. We're trying to create a whole different way of living here, a whole different way of interacting with each other, where everybody's sovereign, you know, and you don't have the outside guru telling you what to do or how you should think or behave, and just sharing tools and techniques.
Listen to the gurus, but take what it's worth and apply what you want to your own life, and thank everybody for their perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't give all your power away to, you know, to an outside external force.
If you see somebody doesn't agree with your perspective, that's great. Offer them new insight. And if they still don't really want to acknowledge your insight and they're ridiculing it, that's not skepticism. That's pseudo skepticism. Block those people. Get them out of there, because they're just preventing you from focusing on what could elevate you and others around you.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you do. It's like a, you know, you have a sore or wound and it's infected. You know, you got to deal with it or you're going to kill the whole organism, you know. So,
Put some sovereign silver on it. Don't cut the tumor out.
Yeah,
Put some hemp oil on it. Do some alternatives.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it's pretty interesting. There's so many different things going on right now. It's just mind-boggling. You know,
that's exciting times. Very exciting.
Yeah, watching all this unfold. You know, we're coming up to the end of the hour. What is the best way that people can get in touch with you if they want to learn more about, you know, some of the projects you're working on?
Sure. My Facebook page, facebook.com/Verbelli, V-E-R-B-E-L-L-I. Or my YouTube channel, which has a lot of posts on suppressed sciences, my experiments, and footages of all sorts. So that's The Real Verbs, THEREALVERBZ on YouTube, The Real Verbs.
Okay.
And I have plenty of links on there, and you can contact me through either of those two sites, my YouTube or my Facebook page. My contact information is on there. Talk to me. Ask me questions. I need all the insight I can get. Let's talk and see what we can solve.
Mm-hmm. I know one thing I definitely will be talking to you about is, and that is the setting this place up, you know, finding a technology that works. The technology I was involved with before is kind of, on the shelf and it's waiting to come out through other avenues. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to get out to the common man, which
I know it will.
No, I'm just talking about
make that happen.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about a specific,
That specific device. Yeah,
specific technology.
We'll get it.
It's going to come out, but
we'll get it.
But eventually I'm looking for other sources that I can, you know, generate our own power here, other healing technologies, you know, all that stuff. I'd like to, you know, work real intensely with multi-wave oscillators and Rife machines. And
there we go. That's what I've been building some of those, the Lakovsky coils and huge rodent coils. Yeah, when it gets a little warmer, I could come up there to the ranch and we can play around with some cool stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, see, we have certain beings that are very attracted to technology. Whenever we light up some things here,
there are certain filters and there are certain waves that you can make, so they're not so invisible anymore. We'll put it that way. There's things we can do to interact with these people. In other words, like seriously, we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds awesome. I've really wanted to. You know, we have the night vision stuff, and we have some other things, and we, you know, signal with lasers, and we have them come exactly when and where they say they're going to come. And that's
if you can put the night vision, if you can have it in red instead of green, you're going to, I think you'd see a little bit more.
Yeah. I have one set I can do that with. I have, with the Sony iGen, you can turn it into different colors.
Try it with red.
Yeah. I'll try that. Yeah. I haven't done that. I've just been mainly using green and blue. But
lower, you want the lower ones. If you can get infrared, lower the lower the waves, the freakier you'll get.
Yeah, the we use the military ones, the third generation.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, military ones, and that really lights things
up.
No,
those are no joke. Those are serious equipment.
Yeah. So I've actually attached one to a camera and I've got amazing footage of these massive ships flying over. And powering up as they get right over us, they just light up the whole sky and pulse everybody on the ground, and you know, everybody starts screaming and hooting and hollering. And
oh, been there, buddy.
Yeah, it's amazing. See, you know, you see, we've had 300 people do an intention experiment, and the ships came right in and flew right over the conference building. You know, so
let's see if we can do this as a people, make a CE5, in our own home.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I always ask people, they go, well, when are we going to have contact? And I go, God, where have you been?
Yeah.
you know, when are they going to show themselves? And I said, you know, they're looking
look
for
up.
Yeah. Yeah. When are you going to get out and start looking for them or do your own research? You know, it's like they're everywhere. But we're definitely coming up to the end of the hour. We're pretty much out of time. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It's been fascinating. And
absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you again to the listeners. And we'll reconvene some other time and see what we can solve in the meantime.
Oh, I know we could have a six-hour show real easy.
So, yeah.
So we go a little deeper into this stuff. But anyway, we're limited to 2 hours right now. But we'll get you back on and get you out here, too, so you can see what we're doing. And I'm sure everybody can find their niche and work together here.
Thank you so much, James. Right on, brother.
All right. You take care.
Have a good day.
All right, James Gilliland signing off, your host. Have a good day and do your own research. Don't go around and listen to what the talking heads and the bot scientists or the politicians say. Check things out for yourself. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's time for us to become sovereign.